Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to start our program today about telling you about how to get better fall pictures with your digital camera. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. He's taught photography at Western Technical College in La Crosse. He's created a mixed media CD, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's written articles for Shutterbug and eDigital Photo and Imaging. So really pleased to have him with us once again to talk about using your digital camera. If you have a question or a comment as we move along today, I hope you'll join us. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Jack with us by phone. Hi, Jack. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you for having me back on. The fall is already in the air, it seems like, at least over here in La Crosse.
Oh, well, are you getting some change in the color of the trees?
Yes. No, well, just a tiny, tiny little bit of it looked pretty hard. I'm over here doing some media work on the 103 acres of the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and I was walking up one of the paths and was discovering there were acorns on the ground.
Ah.
And I'm going, uh-oh, it's getting close.
It's getting close.
This is one of the premier locations, actually all of La Crosse gets really pretty. You can go up onto Granddad's Bluff and look down, and you can go across the river to La Crescent up to the apple orchards and get a magnificent view of the Mississippi and the fall colors. Plus, at the shrine grounds themselves, it really gets really pretty. There's a picture on the website on the article I wrote to accompany this talk that I'll give you an example of what it looks like, and it's really something to see. But it helps to have your camera set up properly.
Yeah, it does. And I tell you what, sometimes you look at a shot and you go, oh, man, I've got these beautiful trees. I've got this deep blue sky in the background. And it just doesn't turn out as the colors just don't come out as well as we'd like them to come out.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no magic to it. As usual, as with any other important event, you've got to have a checklist of things about your camera to set up. And then also maybe go a little bit past the decision-free mode to tweak the camera to make the best use of the lighting situation. There's one thing about digital cameras I don't think a lot of folks realize, and that is that in terms of exposure, dynamic range, as they call it, they're more like slide film cameras than color print. Color print film has got an enormous latitude. You can overexpose and underexpose, and those of us who remember shooting slides, you either get it right or you don't.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that digital cameras are a great deal that way, and your dynamic range really affects how the fall colors look.
So what do you do?
Well, number one, the first thing to do, as always, is make sure your camera is set for the highest resolution. That is, if it's a 10-megapixel camera, make sure it's set for 10 megapixels and not 4. The reason for that is very simple. Number one, you want to use all the resolution your camera has. But number two, you are probably going to crop the photo more than you would normally because frequently there'll be a power line in the way someplace or something.
Right.
If you cut out 50% of a 10-megapixel image, you've got a 5-megapixel image, which isn't too bad.
Yeah.
But if you're shooting at 4 megapixels and you cut it in half, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
So that's the first part. Also, for cameras that have compression, which is a way of saving space on the card by throwing out some of the digital information in the picture, you want the least compression possible. So the highest quality, for example, the default on most cameras is 50% compression. On Canon cameras, you'll see it's got fine, but there's also a super fine setting. And what'll happen is when you turn the compression up to the highest setting, the number of photos you can still take on your card will drop precipitously, but that's what you want.
Yeah, you want the best quality possible.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The other thing is, and again, this is a typical thing for almost any situation, make sure you understand when your camera is really zooming optically with the lens and when the digital zoom kicks in, which is simply cropping the picture inside the camera. Because you may think you're getting this incredibly tight shot of a tree, and when you get home, your 10-megapixel camera was digitally zoomed out all the way, and you've got a 2-megapixel image.
Yeah. So there's plenty of things to think about, but not so bad, really.
Yeah, it's just some of the basics that you should really do. And, of course, as usual, anytime you use your camera, especially if someone else has been playing with it, always check the settings.
Okay. Well, Juan in Madison has a question for you, Jack. So let's go to Juan. Hi, Juan. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Dick, I want to ask you, I have a Nikon SLR camera, and the problem that I'm having is that I think there's dust in the sensor. I've cleaned the lenses, and I still get spots. I once cleaned it myself, but I heard that I should have that professionally cleaned. What do you think about cleaning the sensor of an SLR camera?
It's really tricky. The earlier SLRs did not have a self-cleaning mechanism built into them. The newer ones have a little ultrasonic shake, and some of them even have a sticky substance on both sides of the mirror box to capture the stuff that gets shaken off. Most professionals will have it professionally done, because the one thing you do not want to do is you don't want to blow any kind of aerosol stuff in there. Do not blow into it with your breath. There are some devices you can buy that highly magnify the sensor, and they have a little grabber that lets you touch the specs. But I must tell you that you do run a risk of damaging the sensor itself, which could really be a very expensive repair, if repairable at all. So if it's a real problem, if you've got lots and lots of specs, you might want to have it professionally cleaned. If it's a couple of specs, you might be able to clone those places off on your individual prints using the clone tool of your editing program.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much for calling. Bill in Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. My photography has been, of course, film for about 60 years. And going from box cameras to Ikontas to SLRs. Looking to, at least for family things and that, switching over to a digital.
Yes.
Don't want to go digital SLR because I don't want to have to buy lenses that I already have many of. At what level of a point-and-shoot can you get where you can get a really decent photograph? And mentally, what's the biggest challenge in changing from film to digital?
Yeah, I really hear you on that one, because I went down the same path that you did. I seldom use particular cameras as recommendations, but I will tell you that most recently I've had the opportunity to shoot with a relatively inexpensive point-and-shoot from Panasonic. They have the Lumix line, and they also happen to make the same camera for Leica, and the lenses are Leica designed, and even say Leica on the lenses. And I found that they had some very satisfactory image quality. In addition to that, they've got a couple of additional bells and whistles for extended long exposures and things like that, that people who have been using film cameras for many, many years appreciate. So you might look into the Lumix line. You can find them for under $200. And the only complaint I have about them is there's no optical viewfinder. You have to look at the screen on the back. But you might give that a try. Again, the biggest challenge for most photographers is that, number one, you really should fill the screen. Because if you're used to cropping from a 2.25-inch negative, you can get away with a lot. But if you're cropping a digital image, you can't. And again, the dynamic range is not as wide as film. So those two things are something. One cool thing you can do with most of these cameras, though, is you can set them for the black and white mode, and you can actually see the photo in black and white before you take it, which is kind of fun.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Margie in Dubuque, Iowa. On to you now. Hi.
Hello. Good morning.
Morning. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question about, I have a Canon SLR. And I'm wondering about, I've only shot in JPEG, and they always say, oh, you should shoot in RAW, but I'm a little apprehensive about RAW. I didn't know how more complicated would that be, and when I bring up the pictures, would it show fit on one on the screen?
Okay, number one, in most cases with Canon SLRs, you're missing the third choice, which is called a TIFF, a TIFF, tagged image format file. JPEGs are what they call a compressible lossy format. And so it is possible for the camera to discard some of the, I guess you'd call it, the luminance of the picture. RAW is the exact opposite. It is something where you do all the post-processing yourself on your computer, and frequently the picture will look pretty ugly until you tweak it up. In between those two is something called the TIFF format, which is not a lossy format, not compressible.
Can you spell that for me?
TIFF, T-I-F, or T-I-F-F.
Okay.
Look in your specifications. I'm quite sure that your camera has the TIFF format. It will take up a lot more space than a JPEG, but it's recommended to use that if you are concerned about opening and closing the image a lot. You can always convert it to a JPEG to have a print made online or whatever you need. But a lot of folks are using the TIFF format who are concerned about quality. Again, it's a question of personal taste. RAW is really for enthusiasts.
Yeah.
I use that word laughingly.
Who want to spend a lot of time on the computer.
Right, exactly.
And the photo doesn't look very good at the beginning. Because
it won't, because it's you're bypassing all the in-camera processing that goes on. There's a lot of stuff that is essentially developed inside the camera before you see it with a JPEG or a TIFF. With a RAW image, you're getting a dump off the sensor directly onto the screen, and in many cases, it will look pretty bad.
Yeah. There you have it. Thanks a lot for calling, Margie. Appreciate your call. Mike in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. And I have one question, and that is I listened to public radio when the whole thing, when Kodak stopped making 35 millimeter
film. Yeah.
And they had all these professional photographers on who said they're storing them in their refrigerators and freezers because it's so much better than digital. And because when I look back at my, and I'm right in between, but when you look back, the texture, depth, and color of a 35 millimeter is so much better than digital. And I don't know if you agree with that or not, and it's almost the same thing as the people like Bob Dylan and all the people who say that it sound on a long play record sounds so much better than CDs, because, and I'm 50 years old, so I still live in the past.
Hey, welcome to the club. The thing I tell people in my classes, and I think I've mentioned it here before, is that we are only about 9 years into digital photography. And when regular photography was only 9 years old, we were still coating glass plates with egg white and chemicals to make pictures. So you're going to see a dramatic change the next 5-10 years where the image quality will increase dramatically. Already, it's pretty darn good. You can get a decent 8x10 out that is indistinguishable for most people from a film picture. Now, if you're a fine art photographer, you may have to tweak it a bit more. You may have to have a really high resolution. You may have to do work on the computer. Things will be changing over the next few years. We're going to be seeing a whole increase in the sensitivity of the cameras, probably less use for flash. And frankly, I think what's going to happen is we're going to see the cameras move more towards a video mode where you would freeze the frame and work from that one as opposed to taking the single picture. So things are, to quote Bob Dylan, the times they are a-changing.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, he's right, but the things you really can get a really pretty good photo with these digital cameras now.
Well, I must tell you that we have Bob Metcalf is a local lacrosse photographer, and he is the official archival photographer for this Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. He shoots exclusively digitally, and he has got 16x20 prints on display in the gift shop here that are just exquisite.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
Jack Socha, our guest today from Spring Grove, Minnesota, talking with us today about how to get better shots with your digital camera. He has a mixed media CD, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought, written several articles for Shutterbug and eDigital Photo, and really pleased to have him with us today. Give us a call with your question at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking digital photography today with Jack Socha. Jack, by the way, your website, you've got a lot of information on your website, free information, and including something about the fall foliage photo taking.
Yes, the website is acpress.com, acpress.com. When you go to it, you'll see two red buttons. One is the first button is to go order our CD on how to use the digital camera you just bought. The other button says other AC Press pages. And if you click on that, you'll see three tabs at the top. One of them says photography. You click on that. There's a series of articles, many of them written essentially in anticipation of talking with you. And the most current one is called How to Avoid a Fall Foliage Fiasco. And yes, I did change the spelling of the word foliage. I had two L's in there that Jim pointed out. But there's a list of things that you should probably be familiar with, some of which we already mentioned, plus additional ones like using the plus-minus exposure control, which normally requires most cameras to get off the decision-free setting. The plus-minus control lightens and darkens the image, and that can make a dramatic difference in how the leaves look.
Yeah.
So instead of taking notes this hour, go to the website because it's all there in writing, and you can just print it out and take a look at it.
acpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
Adam in Waupun, we're on to you now. Hi, Adam. Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Larry. Hi, Jack. Well, what I would like to know is maybe you could just give some listeners a brief tutorial on that manual setting on a digital camera I have. I don't even know what the model is. It's a Sony 7.2 megapixel, I believe, and it pretty much exceeds my needs. I don't take a lot of pictures, but I do use the manual setting. I don't use the flash, and I adjust three things typically. One of them is the ISO, and then I also adjust whatever is adjusted by the numbers that range from like negative such and such up to like into the hundreds. And then there's also like, you know, I press a button and I can go like 2.4, and then if I put it to like 5.6, it allows more light in. And I don't know what any of it means. I just basically, you know, I adjust it accordingly. And some of my shots, they even surprise me when I finally see them on the computer screen. It is a really nice camera, and I've taken really wonderful shots with it. But I don't have a clue what I'm doing. And so it would be cool just to get a brief idea. And I am going to check out your website then to get a better idea of what I'm doing there. So.
Well, you're doing all the right things. You've discovered them intuitively, apparently, which is really neat. First, let's talk about the camera settings. And this is fairly universal, although the nomenclature they use may change from, you know, your camera may be a bit different. But normally you have the so-called decision-free setting, which, as the name implies, there's not much you can do to change what the camera does. There's another setting, frequently it's called P or M, most cases P for program. The camera still exposes exactly the same way. It picks the shutter speed, it picks the lens opening, but you are offered some additional options that you were not offered on the decision-free setting. One of them is that plus-minus exposure control we just talked about, where you can lighten or darken the picture, which may make it look better or may make it look worse, depending on what you're doing. The other one is, as you mentioned, this thing called ISO. Cameras have different sensitivities, just like we used to buy different kinds of film, and that will influence how the picture looks. Also, it will influence how fast a shutter speed the camera can use. Many people have discovered that if they use the lower ISOs, especially for fall photos, that the colors look better. So you're doing real well with that. When you get past that, some cameras have what they call shutter priority, where the camera is no longer automatic, it's semi-automatic, where you select the shutter speed, the camera selects the lens opening. Then they have aperture priority, where you select the aperture, the camera selects the shutter speed, and then there's the dreaded full manual, where you're on your own, and you do both. Now, we could spend the entire hour just explaining that. The problem is, it's been 30 years since people have actually wanted to adjust their own cameras, and now all of a sudden, the feature's on the camera, and they don't know the relationship between apertures and shutter speeds and ISOs. You should go online to Kodak or one of the other sites and read up on basic photography theory. Whether it's film or digital, these things still apply. There's a relationship between sensitivity, shutter speed, and lens opening.
Okay, yeah. And your website again, Jack?
acpress.com.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And to give a plug, we do describe all this stuff in the CD. It's a multimedia CD that covers a great deal of this, but also there's a lot of it available free on the internet, too.
All right, wonderful. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks a lot for calling, Adam. Ron in Grafton, your turn now. Hi, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I do have a little question or problem, if you want to call it that. My wife and I both have digital cameras, different brands, okay? And we were on a trip, and we tried to make a movie out of it using Movie Maker.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Now, unfortunately, her camera makes movies in an AVI format.
Right.
Okay. Mine makes them in an MOV format.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Movie Maker won't accept the MOV format.
I know exactly what you're talking about because I've had the same problems. Again, I'm a big fan of free software. It's called freeware. Go up to Google or whatever your favorite search engine is and look for freeware movie file converter. And chances are you will find a free program that will convert your MOV file into an AVI or vice versa.
Okay. And without loss of quality?
It should not be. I've had good luck with them. Sometimes you've got to be careful how to set them because your aspect ratio may change. But there probably will be several of them to try, and then you'll find one that will work.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Paula in Spring Green, we're on to you. Hi, Paula.
Hi. Good day.
Good day.
Hi. I have a Coolpix digital, and I'm also chronologically from Jurassic Park, so this technology is all new to me, but it at 1 month about out of warranty, it all of a sudden eats up batteries. I put in my batteries, and it's, within 5 minutes, it says battery expired.
Mm-hmm. How long have you had the camera?
Just it's 1 month out of warranty, so it's 13 months.
Okay, and what kind of batteries does the camera use? Is it a proprietary, funny-shaped one, or is it a regular double A's?
Double A's.
And what kind of double A's are you using?
I've used the best kind, and I've used a variety of them. I'm not, I think Railvac or...
Okay. Number one, if you want to save a bunch of money, I would strongly suggest that you buy a set of four rechargeable batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And a little charger. It'll probably cost you $20 for the whole thing. Ecologically, it's a good idea, but also save you a ton of money. The other thing is that you may have changed your habits a little bit. Like, for example, do you leave the automatic flash turned on all the time? That uses up a lot of power.
No. And what's happening, is that as soon as I put new batteries in it, within 5 minutes, it's a five-minute thing.
That doesn't sound good.
Expired.
See if you can. Boy, that does sound like a service problem. I hate to say it, but in a 1 month out, all I can suggest is that maybe you try getting some rechargeables and see if that solves the problem. You may have had a bad run, but it sounds like you've been fairly systematic about it. It does sound like a service problem, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
And what would they, like a short, or do you have any idea like what?
No, it could be a short in it of some kind. It could be. There's also the possibility, and this gets a little esoteric sounding, that you should check with Nikon to see if there was what they call a firmware upgrade. Sometimes there's a way of reinstalling the software built into the camera that might correct the problem.
Yeah. That's good information because I called a camera store and they said to probably service 8 weeks to get it returned out and back, and it's not worth it. They said the service on it would be more than what I paid for the camera, which was $250.
Unfortunately, that may be the case. Yeah, that may be the case. I hate to give you the bad news.
Yeah.
But, okay, and that sighting, I'm sorry, what was the, where should I go to, Nikon?
Yeah, the first thing you go, do a little search for a Google-type search. For your model number, Nikon, whatever it is, firmware upgrade.
Firmware upgrade.
It should be on Nikon's site, if there is one. You download that, you put it on a storage card, you stick it in the camera, you press a certain number of buttons on the camera, and it refreshes or upgrades the camera. Also, do a Google search for your brand of camera, your model of camera, and like high battery drain or draining batteries, and see if other people are having the same problem.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right. Thanks
Good luck
a lot.
With that.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Fred in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Thanks. I'm enjoying your CD, by the way.
Oh, good. Thank you.
My question is, I have a Canon PowerShot SD850.
Okay.
And I was wondering if I could use a Sagar or some SAKAR slave flash.
Okay.
How would that work?
It depends on whether it was designed for digital or film cameras. The slave flashes, for those who don't know what we're talking about, are a flash that does not connect via a wire of any kind. There's a little electric eye on the flash. When the flash on the camera fires, it fires the flash on the other flash as well. These were very popular in the days of film cameras, and then people discovered that due to the way electronics work, they didn't work with digitals, but there are now are ones that will do it. That's not the most important brand in the world you've ever heard of. I've got a couple of products of theirs which are fine. It's in a relatively low price range.
Yes.
If it's something that you could return if it doesn't work, I would give it a try. But they, theoretically, if you have one that is, the flash has to be made for digital cameras. You can't use one that was made several years ago for film cameras.
Okay. Because what I'm trying to do is increase it a little bit when you're in a big area.
I got you. I know exactly what you're talking about. No. That really is your only option at this point.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right.
Thank
thanks a lot for calling. An email from Joe in Rockford, Illinois. He says, I have an Olympus digital camera that's supposed to be both shockproof and waterproof. After years of not wanting to risk it, I finally took it into the ocean with me to take some snorkeling pics. It took one pic, and the screen went dark. It still takes pictures, and the screen works every once in a while, but something went wrong, and the screen only works once in a while. It was supposed to be submersible to 9 meters, and I only took it about a foot into the water. Is it trashed, or do you think I can get it fixed?
I'd be talking to Olympus about that, especially if it's still in a kind of in a warranty period. Most digital cameras, they should be sealed up. In the old days of film cameras, the underwater cameras, like the Nikonuses and things, you had to check the seals and put petroleum jelly on them to keep them maintained. But on digital cameras, since you're not opening and closing them that much, the only place you'd be worried about it would be the battery compartment or where the card goes in. I'd be doing some serious talking to Olympus and see what they have to say. And again, do a search on the internet to see if others have had the same problem. Because if it's something that has happened to, you know, hundreds of these models,
yeah,
they'll be more interested in talking to you.
Yep, absolutely. Donna in Middleton wonders if you can recommend a company that does good printing. I can't seem to find a photo printer that gives my digital photos the best quality.
I hesitate to mention a particular one because, they literally vary from store to store, and depending on who's operating it and whether they changed the chemicals recently or not. I suggest, frankly, you go to a local place. This could be one of your superstores or your drugstore chains where they've got the lab right there. Find one that you like and then use it. And this way, if you pick up the pictures and they don't look right, you can hand it back to them and say, do it again.
Yeah.
But as far as the online ones go, you know, it's more of a hassle to mail the stuff back. So I would try to get them done locally. Believe it or not, some of the ones that are in these drugstore chains that I've dealt with have done a really good job.
Let's go to Jessica in La Crosse next. Hi, Jessica.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The question I have is I am wondering about upgrading the lens on my camera because I have a Nikon D40, and I just have the lens that came with it, which is like an 18 to 55 millimeter.
Sure.
And I'm sort of interested in getting an all-purpose, high-quality lens. I have two small kids, and I like to take pictures of them, but I also like taking pictures of landscape and wildlife, things like that. So I was wondering what your recommendation would be for what kind of lens to look for.
Well, for one thing, I get a lot of people who want to do kid shots and sports shots, all of which require a lot of light to make a faster shutter speed. And frankly, the lenses that come with these cameras are from 4 to 5.6, which is a relatively dim lens for indoor work. One of the things you might consider buying, and it'll cost you about $100, maybe 90, is try to find the standard non-zoom 50-millimeter lens. Because it has an aperture of 1.8, which is much faster than your zoom lens. And when you put it on a digital body versus a film body, it acts like a 75-millimeter portrait lens. And I found that a lot of people who are trying to do kid shots especially really enjoy that because it finally produces a fast enough shutter speed that they can stop the kid.
So
that's going to cost you a whole bunch of money. If you want something for scenics, then you got to shop around and figure out what price you want and what aperture you want. If you want a fast, high-speed lens, it will cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would look into the 50-millimeter Nikkor first before you get anything else. I think you'd be very happy with it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thanks very much for calling. Bill in Madison sent us an email with a couple of questions. Let's do the first one here. Are some sensors better than others, he asked. Some sensors, when looked at physically, seem very small, although they promise high pixel counts. Some sensors are larger, yet their pixel count is no higher.
Well, you know, there's only about three companies making sensors. So you're really going to find that they're all pretty much the same. The only difference is there's one chip called the Foveon chip, and I think the only company using it is called Sigma. It works totally different than all the rest. There are CMOS chips, which stands for complementary metal something oxide, versus charge coupled devices, CCD. And there's been an ongoing battle as to which one of those two will produce the better quality. The one is less expensive to produce, the CMOS. But frankly, Canon uses that one in all their SLRs, and people are thrilled with what's going on there. So you're really more important than which chip is in the camera is the built-in, they call them algorithms, that are used by the camera to process the image coming from the chip. And that you have to look at some reviews and take a look at sample pictures and things like that. So It's not so much the chip, it's what happens to the signal after the chip takes it in.
And he had a related question. He says, while some cameras promise high ISO potential, can they actually deliver quality? A friend with a sophisticated Nikon shows me marvelous shots at ISO 6400, yet he indicates he would never shoot beyond 800 with a lesser Nikon, even though the lens is the same.
Yeah, it's getting better. For those of you who are not following the conversation, the sensitivity of cameras is increasing. It used to be the top was the equivalent of ASA 400 film or ISO 400 film. Now it's hitting 6400.
Yeah.
But there are some trade-offs. And every month that you wait, the quality is getting better. So I've been seeing people shooting at 800 without any problem. When you get up to 3200 or 6400, there are some quality trade-offs, but I guess you have to ask yourself, do you want a little bit of a snowy-looking picture, or do you want one that's blurred?
Yeah.
If you're trying to stop action. If you wait another 6 months, they'll be even better.
Rod in Madison, we're on to you. Hi, Rod.
Yeah, I'm looking at buying a couple of different cameras because we take pictures of the jobs that we do at work, and I needed to find a good durable camera that would take a nice photo that we could put on a website.
Is it are they large, like buildings, or is it small pictures, indoors, outdoors?
It's large open areas.
Large open areas.
Inside of a building.
Okay.
I would lean personally towards one of the point-and-shoot cameras, either from Kodak or perhaps from Panasonic, because they generally offer a little wider lens at the wide side than many of the other cameras do. I know Kodak in particular has come out with a few point-and-shoots with a really wide lens, like the equivalent of a 24-millimeter in a film format. And even the little Lumix that I've been playing with has got a much wider lens than many of the other point-and-shoots that I've used. So I think for interiors, you're going to want to do that. If you buy an SLR, single-lens reflex with removable lenses, you're going to spend a lot of money to get a really wide lens. So I would, frankly, I'd look into one of the Kodaks. I think you might be very surprised.
Okay, cool.
Thanks a lot for calling, Rod. Good luck to you. Bob in Wauwatosa, your turn. Hi,
good.
Bob.
Good morning. Jack, I wonder if you could explain to us in a little more detail what exactly dynamic range is. I've got a couple of digital cameras, but I'm always looking for something better. You know how that
sure.
is. And I don't understand the concept of dynamic range. Does it have to do with the combination of minimum and maximum shutter speeds along with minimum and maximum apertures or
no, it's,
what?
It's and really not
take
to do
my
with the mechanics.
Here.
It's got to do with the image itself. The amount of color from the blackest black to the whitest white and how many steps in between that there are. There are even some cameras now that will allow you to, if you put the camera on a tripod, to take two pictures, one underexposed, one overexposed, and combine the two to expand that range. So it's got more to do with think of Ansel Adams. You know, he had these pictures of these mountains where there was coal black in one place and snow white in the other,
yeah.
and just dozens and dozens of shades of gray. That's a wide dynamic range. So it really, we're looking at something that for the average person looking at it on a little print, you wouldn't notice, but for fine art photography, it's a concern. So it's more about the range of luminance from black to white or and in color, as opposed to anything to do with the shutter speeds or apertures.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Eric in Madison. On to you now. Hi, Eric.
Hey, good morning. Like many of us, I'm a film photographer from way back. I used a film SLR for 25, 30 years, taking mostly slides using Kodachrome, Ektachrome, and Fujichrome. Mm-hmm. I have thousands of slides in my collection. And about 5 years ago, I bought my first digital camera, a point-and-shoot. And a month in May, I just bought my first digital SLR. So my thing is that for about 5 years, I've been shooting digital photographs, but I haven't totally figured out what to do with them after I take them. And another, I do have a computer, and I do have some of my photographs on the computer, but most of them are on CDs, and I'm not sure if you have any recommendations for what program or what's the best way to organize and your photos on the computer.
Well, for one thing, getting them off the computer and onto some other kind of media is a good idea. CD, DVD, and in many cases now you can even buy these little thumb drives that are 16 gigabytes. There are a number of programs, both free and pay, that will let you caption the pictures and organize them. I think there's one called ACD or ACDC. Just look, do a Google search for photo organizers, and you'll find both free ones and ones that are commercial that will let you caption them and organize them by date, subject matter, and things like that. And that would be your best bet.
Yeah. Okay. And then can I another question quick?
Sure.
Since I have all these thousands of slides, and I would like to convert them into digital files, I'm interested in getting a scanner and doing a scanning myself. I wonder if Jack has any words of wisdom about the best way to do it and things like that.
The answer is I hope you have a lot of time. Because I've got a scanner that I paid $20 for on sale. I have seen ones that cost $600. There obviously is a huge difference in quality between the two of them. But in either case, there's a manual process where you've got to stick it in, look it on the screen, adjust it, capture it, take it out, do the next one. This is why commercial labs will charge you $1 or $2 each to do the same thing. There just is no fast way of digitizing slides. You have to do it one at a time. But, hey, winter's coming, So maybe if the fall shows aren't very good, you got something to do. But there are Nikon makes a cool scan. I think it is a slide scanner. There's a number of them out there. There's a few flatbed scanners that have a lid that you can put slides in, but there are some ones that are dedicated for slides and negatives that produce extremely high quality. But regardless of how you do it, it's going to be very time-consuming.
Good luck. Thanks, Eric, for calling. And finally, Bruce has no viewfinder on his digital camera, wonders if there's a trick to overcome reflections on the screen, the LCD screen.
There are a few products on the market that will allow you to snap a little shade on the back. Some of them are self-adhesive. And if just go to any well-stocked camera store and just buy the one that's appropriate for your particular brand. I've used a couple of them in the past, and the Delkin is one company that comes to mind that makes one. And they work pretty well. And also, when they're folded down, they protect the screen from getting banged. So they're a pretty good deal for like $15.
Ah. And Jack, again, your website?
It's acpress.com. That's A-C-P-R-E-S-S. .com. You'll find information there on the CD, how to use the digital camera you just bought, but also the other pages are there with lots of articles, including one on the 5 free image editing programs that I think you'll enjoy, which I use all the time.
Always a pleasure, Jack. I hope you'll be with us again.
Oh, I'd love to do it.
All right, Jack. Thank you very much for being with us today. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. Taught photography at Western Technical College in La Crosse, created that mixed media CD we were mentioning, how to use that digital camera you just bought, written lots of articles. acpress.com is his website. Really happy to have Jack with us, and he'll be back. We will talk with him again for sure. And coming up, another regular guest that we've had many times on the show. I love having him on, Jim LaLuzerne of De Pere, Wisconsin, to talk with us about prescription eyewear here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.